Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. Guess what? 2019 is almost, not just yet, but almost coming to a close, which means we're about to be seeing a lot of best of the decade lists. Well, Pitchfork decided to get ahead of the curve and released its lists of the 200 best albums and 200 best songs of the 2010s. It's part of their Best Music of the 2010s project, which also includes articles about how social media changed music, the weirdest album launches, the most important subgenre of rap in the last decade, and a whole lot more. We have a lot to get to, so let's just dive right in with Pitchfork executive editor Matthew Schnipper. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So how did you compile the list?
Oh, man. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears. No, we have Pitchfork has a pretty amazing voting tool, and we asked a whole bunch of people to vote. And imagine you were moving songs and albums around in your Netflix queue. Kind of looks like that, to give you a little visual.
That's cool.
And you would say, okay, is this Frank Ocean song the best one, or is it this one the best one? And then some kind of magical algorithm helps weight all of those things and put it together. And then there's a little bit of magic dust that gets sprinkled on the spreadsheets after that, where we go like, maybe this Frank Ocean song is better than that one. And voila, basically. A lot of conversation from, and the people who are voting is our staff and a collection of people who are regular critics for Pitchfork. People, we brought in a bunch of people who are smart thinkers about music who mm-hmm. may not be regular writers for us, just to kind of have a huge breadth of people thinking about really what was the canon this past decade.
Right. So people who write for The New Yorker about music, people mm-hmm. like that.
Yep.
All right. So let's just start.
Let's go.
The number one spots. Frank Ocean Blonde was ranked number one album of the 2010s, and Kendrick Lamar's All Right was the number one song. So what does it mean to be number one?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's sort of, you know, who's be the Simone Biles of music right now? I feel like, you know, you can keep doing bigger and bigger and bigger flips. I feel like that is what Frank Ocean continues to do. You will notice not only was he both of his albums in this decade, Channel Orange and Blonde, were both in our top 10. And I think, you know, there are some people who maybe think that those things should have been switched, that Channel Orange was the better album than Blonde. But what he does is something that to me was a foregone conclusion as the best album of this decade. He was able to build a universe in a way that I don't think any other artist has. He's able to connect different kinds of music. He's able to be gentle. He's able to be funny. He's able to be serious. He's able to also just make earworms in a way that you wouldn't expect from someone who is in some ways an underground artist. You're not hearing a ton of that on the radio. All Right, you know, by Kendrick is an anthem. That's the kind of thing, the song that, you know, hits you over the head with a 2x4 by saying, this is the best song you've ever heard. This is an anthem. This is going to be chanted. This is going to be legendary. Blonde sneaks up on you, but when it does, it's in your blood. It's not getting out.
Let's listen to a little bit of each. Let's listen to Frank Ocean, Pink and White.
Yeah, yeah. That's the way every day goes. Every time we've no control. If the sky is pink and white, if the ground is black and yellow, it's the same way you showed me. Nod my head, don't close my eyes.
I like the way the sneaking up on me.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that explains a lot mm-hmm. when you listen to that. But it's interesting. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's hard for me to not sing along to that. You know, you put a microphone in front of me, it's like time for karaoke, which is happening on the subway, in the car, in the radio station. Like, this is an album that you hear it and it's like, you know, you just have a reflex to be a part of it. You know, it's like somebody taps you on the knee.
You mentioned Kendrick having an anthem-like quality. Mm-hmm. He's been so politically and artistically important in the last decade. He won the Pulitzer.
No big deal.
For Obama often put him on his playlists. I'm really interested in what do you think was going on culturally in the 2010s that helped it be Kendrick's decade?
Well, it seems like it's been a pretty calm time politically, so. No, I'm kidding. he hasn't had too much to talk about. It's really, you know, I mean, look, this is an era of Black Lives Matter. This is the Trump era, not just the Trump era, the transition out of the Obama era. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could name Mike Brown. This is a song that sort of encapsulates both the pain of generally being alive, the pain of being alive as a Black American, and hopefully like the inevitable, hopefully, triumph that is coming. And I think to some degree what he does is he does it in a way that feels contemporary, that doesn't feel like it's pandering. He does it in a way that kind of, you know, you could play this song in a bar or at a club and it will fit there. You can play it at a march. And I think that being able to live in both those places, that's what makes it such an important song.
Well, let's listen to Kendrick Lamar, All Right.
And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the bass down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in a twilight. We're pretty Benjamin is the highlight.
I'm interested, when you were putting it together the list and sort of editing it and curating it, how important was cultural impact? Because you had something like Old Town Road, which isn't on the list.
Great song.
But it had a big cultural impact, I'd say, in the past year. So what was the weighting of cultural impact?
I mean, a lot of it. And you're looking at the, you know, Lil Nas X's number one fan in the entire universe. Like, I love that song. I can't say the same is true for every music critic. And I think Pitchfork is a place that came out of being a pure, is the song good? Is the song bad? You know, we still put number scores on our albums. Is this good? Is it bad? It's kind of that black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for Frank, it was that pink and white, I guess. But I think that that's changed. The way that people listen to music has become democratized. When it was only kind of a bunch of dudes sitting around looking at indie rock albums, which, you know, definitely is happening, there was a smaller set of cultural landmarks that you had to look at. I just don't think that's the case with music. We have a piece up on Pitchfork today that I think is great, that's about how indie went pop and pop went indie in the past decade. And I don't want to say that things flattened out, but the internet made pop, indie, rock, rap, all of those things pretty similar. And music at this point just doesn't exist outside of a cultural, outside of culture. It's not just, you know, is that guitar solo really excellent or is it not? There's just more than that. To some degree, you're like, well, why are you playing guitar and not playing on a computer? You didn't make that song on an iPad? You know, there's a lot of different things to think about, which is exciting to me as someone who likes to think. I don't think you can't remove culture from music. They're the same thing. So we thought about it a lot.
My guest is Matthew Schnipper. He's executive editor of Pitchfork. We're talking about their best albums and singles of the decade. So we were trying to figure, this is such a big list, and we were trying to sort of wrestle it to the ground. So I sent out a staff email saying, send back your favorites from these lists. And that was supposed to help. And it was not helpful because people just kept sending back giant lists and hilarious responses. So what we did is we really culled it down to some of our staff picks. We made people limit it to one or two.
Okay.
So this is Jordan's picks. Jordan picked for the best albums, number 23, Kacey Musgraves.
Ooh, I saw her last night at Radio City.
Oh.
Excellent.
Golden hour. What does she represent for the
2010s? You know, one thing I got to say she really represents is she's representing for the weed smokers. She is a big old stoner. It's wild. But she's fun. She's a country singer, and she kind of represents a blend of a pop sheen on country music. She's not necessarily like Taylor Swift, who is, for the most part, gone pop. Like, Kacey's albums are country, but they do have the kind of that a little bit of like a drum machine knock to them sometimes that makes them fit in on that can fit in on a playlist with with The Weeknd or with Bon Iver or with St. Vincent. But she really represents being yourself, safe spaces. She is very, she grew up in the South in Texas, a small town. She is super pro gay rights, and she's super pro being yourself at all times. I was excited. There was a guy in front of us who was definitely also very smoking a lot of weed at Radio City. He had kind of had figured out how to make that work for himself. I don't know if anybody listening is a big Aphex Twin fan, who is a kind of pioneering electronic musician. He had the Aphex Twin logo tattooed on his arm, and he was, hands up, knew every word to every song, screaming back at Kacey Musgraves. Not the typical Kacey Musgraves fan that I would have imagined. There were a lot of people there in cowboy hats too, but this guy was having the time of his life, and you'd imagine he never went to anything else but a rave. So she really is kind of for everybody in a way that I think is very warm. I don't know. I love her.
Let's take a listen to Slow Burn, which was net best song at number 67. This is Kacey Musgraves.
I'm all right with a slow burn, taking my time, let the world turn. I'm gonna do it my way, it'll be all right if we burn it down and it takes all night. It's a slow burn.
All right, we're gonna move on to our senior producer Rosie's pick, SZA, Control, which was at number 24. By the way, I showed you how Rosie rated it. I showed you the email,
mm-hmm.
right? So she would write the word yes after them. And then sometimes she would put like seven S's on yes, when she really, her longest one was for SZA's Control.
She deserves them. Great album. I love this album.
Why is it so high on the list?
Oh, man. You know, and I would argue with respect to all my colleagues, this could have been higher.
Hmm.
This is an album that, oh man, it's honest, it's personal. It's definitely in a post-Frank Ocean world of blending the here's who I am, here's why I'm feeling sad, here's why I'm feeling happy, I'm going to just kind of give it to you kind of song, or kind of album, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got, like, she's quirky and funny. You know, there's a line in this album where she's like, well, let's just stay up all night and watch Narcos. You know, it's the kind of detail that you love to read in a novel, and she puts it into music.
Let's listen to SZA.
My man is your man, hurt is her man too. My man is your man, hurt, that's her man. I'm satisfied through the weekend. You like 9 to 5, I'm the weekend. Uh-huh.
That was SZA. All right, Rosie gets two because she's the boss. She album 138, Alabama Shakes, Sound and Color, which I also quite
great
like
record.
Bit. Interesting, Brittany Howard just released a solo album.
Very different than the Alabama Shakes album. You know, Alabama Shakes, she has got, I mean, the thing that is amazing about Brittany Howard is her voice. You know, she has such a presence. You know, in some ways she's a classic blues, you know, blues singer. The Alabama Shakes Sound Color, I think, is that kind of the pinnacle of what they've done, which is kind of a dirty blues rock. The kind of, to me, what it's all about is the shape of that. No, mm-hmm. no shape and color, pun intended. It's about the kind of silhouette that they carve out, which is huge. You know, the songs are good, you know, on their face, but played by somebody else, sung by somebody else, the songs themselves wouldn't have that same kind of power that they have. And then, you know, she's just got a walloping voice.
Let's listen to Alabama Shakes.
A new way. It must be falling away.
This is completely an opinion question because I guess you traffic in opinions occasionally.
Yep.
What do you think the next decade's going to be for her? Is it going to be one of these cases of the lead singer steps out and just becomes an entity unto herself, and that's a past tense thing?
I could see her doing both.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not? You know, have your cake and eat it too, Brittany Howard. But I think she's going to become a bigger star than she is on her own, you know, as just the Alabama Shakes. You know, she seems like the person who can act, be on television. You know, she seems like a multi-hyphenate. You know, maybe she's got an EGOT coming. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
My guest is Matthew Schnipper from Pitchfork. We're talking about their best of the decades. We'll continue this conversation after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Matthew Schnipper from Pitchfork. He's the executive editor, and we're talking about their best of the decades release of the best albums and the best singles. Okay, so our producer, Simon, who produced the segment. Hi, Simon. He wants us to go to Vampire Weekend.
Let's do it.
Tell me a little bit more about Vampire Weekend and how they made the list.
Ooh, Vampire Weekend, man, what a decade for that band. Mm-hmm. They are... If you know Vampire Weekend, you may think about Ralph Lauren, the Upper West Side.
Columbia University.
I should say Morningside Heights probably is a little more accurate. they're, you know, they started as a preppy group. They have evolved a bit out of that into being, now they're kind of, imagine you went to summer camp as has been described to me. You went to summer camp and you knew the preppy kids. You knew the kids that love the Grateful Dead. You knew the kids that love the Grateful Dead, but were also kind of preppy. They went to private school maybe. They're kind of that as adults. They like to smoke weed, but like they also like, you know, nice ties. It's kind of like one of those things.
Well, let's listen to Vampire Weekend, Cousins. Be lining the walls when your birthright is interest you could just put off. Me and my cousins and you and your cousins, it's a line that's always running. Me and my cousins and you and your cousins, I can feel it coming. All right, let's move over to songs. Yeah. What do you think? Yep, for it?
Yeah, absolutely. I love songs.
All right, songs. Simon, he gets another pick because he produced the segment. Songs at number 14, Angel Olsen, Shut Up and Kiss Me. Mm. For those who are not familiar with Angel Olsen, tell us about her.
So Angel Olsen, she started, I think, earlier in this decade as just a straight-up folk singer. Mm-hmm. And she has a beautiful album called Halfway Home. It's extremely spare. She has a voice that sounds like if you made, you know, if you had a yodel try to sing, you know, yodel or try to sing R&B. It's incredible. Check out Halfway Home if you haven't heard it. She then kind of moved on to making bigger, bolder, not necessarily popular songs, but more full sounding songs, not just her and acoustic guitar. Shut Up, Kiss Me is a very fun song. You could imagine this being sung by the Supremes. It could have been a 45 that was out on Motown. It's got a good stomp to it.
Let's listen to Shut Up, Kiss Me from Angel Olsen. You always get me at fuzz guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Every time.
And she's great. And she's got a new album out now that's excellent. She's about to go on tour. She's an amazing performer. Fun, funny. You know, there's really not a bad word to say about her.
Let's talk about St. Vincent. Mm-hmm. Song number 169 is New York. Now, her album is on a different...
Different album.
Different album. How does that work? Why did that happen? Or why do you think that happened?
Well, I think that there is... Sometimes, you know, think about, like, did you have a good year? Did you have a good day? You know, like, mm-hmm. Sometimes it's amazing. Sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, man, birth of my first child. You know, I got married. We got that great dog. That promotion came through, like, 1990. You know, and sometimes you're like, yesterday was cool. Like, Blair Witch came out, and I saw that. I don't know where that came from. But, you know, you just had a good day. New York is on an album that I think is maybe not great, but it may be the best song she's ever written, you know? So what are you going to do? You don't get extra credit for doing the whole thing, but like we can make those admissions and say, hey, Buried on this album that was, you know, pretty good is something that is excellent. So,
all right.
It's a good day.
Let's listen to St. Vincent, New York. A good day. Number 169, St. Vincent, New York. All right, so Jordan had a pick of Phoebe Bridgers, Motion Sickness. And one of the reasons, kind of calling back to what we were talking about earlier, is not just because it's a great song, but because she's become politically important
yes.
in the past decade. Tell folks how, and how much did that factor into the consideration?
So this is a fascinating song, which I will say, if you want to look in a way which is completely out of cultural context, excellent. You don't want to know anything about what she's singing about, you're going to like this song. When you get to learn that this song ends up being about her relationship with Ryan Adams, it is a little bit more complicated. Ryan Adams, I don't have time to go through the entire tale of him, but he is a guy who has taken advantage of a lot of women, a lot of people who he has made music with.
He's a very talented producer and a very talented singer-songwriter. We actually had Liz Phair in last week. And
oh, boy. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I think people know that he was part of the Me Too issues.
Yes, and there's an excellent investigation about that was published in the New York Times, and it turned out that she's literally singing about some of the things that he had said to her, texted her on this song, and it's super literal. Obviously you're not gonna be able to play this whole song, but I recommend people go listen to it. What I think is interesting about this song is that she took what was going on and she used it, mm-hmm. and said, well, this is mine, I'm gonna make a kick-ass song out of it. And you don't want it. It sucks that happened. It sucks that happened.
It did.
This song is
period.
Great.
She made interesting art from it. So let's take a listen to a little bit of Motion Sickness.
I have motion sickness. Somebody roll.
That was Phoebe Bridgers. Okay, my picks. Song number 27, M.I.A., Bad Girls. So this one, just because I am the eldest person on our staff, I picked the oldest song, I think, all the way back to 2010 for this one.
Oh, my God, the bad old days, you know?
The bad old days. Yeah. So I'm interested. You know, sometimes when you see these lists, they tend to weight heavily towards more recent songs. Mm-hmm. Why did this one make it? Why did this one stand out after 9-10 years?
MIA is amazing. She's always been amazing. She is a singer who has, I actually want to say, it was ahead of her time, mm-hmm. in the, mid to early aughts, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Just throwing aughts out there, I guess. Bad Girls is another kind of anthem that she had, and I think her music has always been political. This song, I think, can be done as kind of a fun, completely pump your fist track. It works, not the same as like a Kendrick in the club and in the streets kind of thing, but maybe not so far away from that either.
But it also has sort of the multi-culti vibe, mm-hmm. which people will hear when we listen.
Mm-hmm. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. My chain hits my chest when I'm banging on the dashboard. My chain hits my chest when I'm banging on the radio. Back, get down. Pull me closer if you think you can hang. Hands up, hands high. Don't go screaming if I blow you with a bang.
Let's just say there's good things there aren't video cameras
anymore. Wow. Oh, man. I really wish, that this was being live streamed, because Allison Stewart just popped off. So yeah.
I did. It was lit in here for about 32 seconds.
That was like some living emoji stuff right there. That was amazing.
I just love the track. I mean, I love the whole vibe of it. Yeah, well, thank you for that. Appreciate mm-hmm. that. Yeah. My second choice was Ellie Mae Booed Up.
Oh,
because, first of all, she gave us a new verb. that's my pitch on this. What's yours?
Ella Mae, I have to say, I did not necessarily expect the song to have the staying power that it did. She is a British singer, which I think maybe a lot of people don't realize. It's a classic radio R&B song. It's about being booed up, being in a great relationship. It's not a super fast song. It's just like a deadly little killer. It's a great song. It's an earworm. Mm-hmm. It just hits you. Sometimes it's like you want to eat a delicious crazy meal with all kinds of crazy spices. Sometimes you're like, give me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That's just it just kicks ass. This is the best PB&J you ever had.
Let's do it.
You know how I like it. Ain't gotta tell you what to do.
I'm interested on these two picks about the evolution of the female R&B sort of hip hop singer in the decade.
That's interesting.
What have you seen change?
Lyrics, I think. Yeah. I think to me, lyrics is the thing that's changed. We talk about SZA. I think that, and I wouldn't say that this is specific, and maybe that is what changed, that R&B is a thing, you know, it is a genre that works for men and for women. Mm-hmm. And I think Frank Ocean came in and I think knocked it on its butt. And the most interesting music, I think SZA is up there, you know, pretty much mm-hmm. side by side with him, really takes this music and says, okay, I'm not just going to write platitudes. I'm going to bring you into my world, you know? To some degree, I think Boot Up does that. It has its little, like, Boot Up is cute, and, like, I'm never going to find it until, like, oh, man, I'm not saying Boot Up. Nobody needs an old Jewish man singing Boot Up on the radio, or really anywhere. My wife is the only person that needs to suffer through that. Sorry, Allegra. But
it's that, personal in that sense. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's personal. You want to go, you know, these are people, it's like, look, if you learned how to talk about relationships on text messages, on Twitter, on Instagram, that's how you learn to write, you know? Mm-hmm. If you, in the past, if, like, you learned how to do it by listening to other R&B songs on the radio exclusively, that's what you're going to mimic. But there's a lot of different ways to communicate, much of them shorter, briefer, and, like, requiring meme-ish punchlines. Mm. You're going to bring that to your songs.
My guest is Matthew Schnipper. He is the executive editor of Pitchfork. We're talking about their best of the aughts, of the, actually 2010s, excuse 2010s, me, 2010s. Yeah. We're going to talk about a couple snubs. I've left to save the last 2 minutes for snubs. Ursula and our staff wants to know, where is Lizzo?
Where is Lizzo?
Where is Lizzo?
I mean, where isn't Lizzo, I think, is maybe the better question. I think Lizzo is an amazing artist, and we have a shout-out to Rawi Kamir, who wrote an amazing review of Lizzo's album and talks about the power of Lizzo. I think when you're looking at cultural impact and music, this is a great thing. I think Lizzo's music hasn't necessarily matched the cultural footprint that she has. I don't think that that's bad. You want to listen to Lizzo and get what you're getting mm-hmm. out of it? Do it. I think the music is maybe not there as much.
All right, the next one, Simon, was surprised that This Is America by Childish Gambino didn't make the cut, considering what a big song it was and what a big cultural footprint the video made.
Exactly, the video made. That is the best video. It's an incredible video. He is an amazing personality, an amazing actor. I think you separate that song from his video and you don't necessarily have the same kind of, it's not striking in the same way.
What was your favorite thing on the list, favorite song?
Oh, my favorite song. Well, I'm going to go with favorite album, which is Blonde.
You
know, it's just, that's it. There's no question.
My guest has been Matthew Schnipper from Pitchfork. He's the executive editor. You should check out these lists. I also want to know that we are going to release our own Spotify playlist of those staff favorite songs from the Pitchfork list, as well as songs that we think should have been on the list.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for not trolling me too much.
No problem. We will see you again, Matthew. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and I'll meet you at the top of the hour.